Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is St. Louis on the Air.
Cool things on the walls and really family-friendly place. We used to kind of run around the barn afterwards.
It had whole strawberries. It had cut-up bananas. It had a rum sauce. It had gold brick chocolate on it and was all smothered in mountains of Keithley Dairy whipped cream.
They didn't open until 5 or 6 in the evening, but they stayed open till 3 in the morning.
Not only do I put the history, but I'm able to find old photographs. I've got a huge menu collection, and I put the full menus online. So I'll get emails from grandchildren that you know, thank you. I didn't know this about the restaurant, and these are photographs I've never seen before.
I'm Sarah Fenske. Dr. Harley Hammerman knows that the classic St. Louis question is about high school, but he likes to ask a different question. What restaurant do you miss the most? The St. Louis Radiologist has two blogs. They're called Lost Tables and Lost Dishes. Both were inspired by his journey into the local restaurants he loved and lamented. And he joins us now to talk about this side project and some of the restaurants that inspired it. So, Dr. Harley Hammerman, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I love talking about lost restaurants.
Lost restaurants. It's a great topic. And this project has really taken off. But something that I was so fascinated by is it actually all goes back to your love of the playwright Eugene O'Neill. So I have to ask first, what got you interested in him?
So that was a 10th grade high school teacher. Her name was Wanda Bowers. And we read the play, The Emperor Jones, in her class. And she beat on the desk. She beat the tom-tom. And I was hooked. And then I got a first edition of the play, Our Wilderness, at the St. Louis Book Fair, and started this collection of first editions and manuscripts. And it became the largest collection of O'Neill materials in the world, or in the country, outside of Yale. And recently, a number of years ago, sold it to Washington University. But part of the project was a website. My kids sort of gave me a domain name, eoneill.com. And I was able to share the collection on that website, and it gave me the ability to write and research, and sort of, I like that. Yeah. And once I sold the website, I didn't have anything else to do. So that sort of led into Lost Tables.
And so when you were archiving all this material about Eugene O'Neill, was there a big audience for that?
Surprisingly not. It's interesting. People like talking about restaurants a whole lot more than they like talking about Eugene O'Neill. Most people didn't even know who Eugene O'Neill was.
Okay, that's heartbreaking because, I mean, the man is a master. I feel that we should give him that.
Yeah, but, you know, they don't even get to his place in high school anymore. My kids, they run out of time and they wouldn't read his plays.
Wow. Okay, so you've just broken my heart. And now you're going to break it all over again because we're going to talk about some of these lost St. Louis restaurants. So you sold that archive, and that's amazing. Something you started in high school ends up acquired by Wash U. And then you thought, I want to keep going with the blogging? That was the thinking?
That was part of it. Actually, it started out, I started researching a restaurant from my childhood called Golden Fried Chicken Loaf. It was a fried chicken restaurant. It was on Delmore, just west of DeBolivar. And I used to go there with my mother and my grandmother and my siblings on Friday nights when my father worked. My father and I, we'd go pick up chicken and dumpling soup and pies on Sundays to take home. And so I started researching that and did a lot of research and actually got the domain name goldenfriedchickenloaf.com. Like, who would ever put that in?
Yeah.
And had a website up. And then I figured out, there's only so far this can go.
Yeah, that's not like the life of Eugene O'Neill.
No,
like, you're going to hit a wall with that collection.
I did quickly. So I decided, well, maybe I'll write about other restaurants from my youth. And it just sort of blossomed from there. And I had to come up with a title. So I think I considered Vanishing Tables at one point, but ended up with Lost Tables.
It's a great title. I mean, it just sort of instantly evokes this vanished world.
Right.
And you've ended up developing a huge following for this. I mean, it's not just that you're kind of, you know, blogging away in the cliche of the blogger. You also have like a really big following on Facebook for this. Is that something that you've been real strategic about trying to do?
Well, as I was writing these articles, I figured, who's going to read them? Or how's anybody going to know to read them? So I decided maybe a Facebook group would be a good way to publicize them. So that was the reason I started the Facebook group. But the Facebook group sort of took on a life of its own. People just love talking about old restaurants. And, oh, lots of people on the Facebook group have no idea there's a website as much as I try to publicize it. And those that do, a lot of them don't want to read the articles. You know, they just want to talk about restaurants. So
they're just there posting about what's on their mind.
Absolutely. And that's great.
But does it also drive a lot of traffic to the reports you're doing?
It does. It does drive a lot of traffic. So a lot of it comes from there. And I can see I'll announce a new article that I've written, and you see that the hits on the website jump up.
That's great. And these articles, I should mention, I feel like there's a lot of people who have some nostalgia for old restaurants, and they might say, oh, I remember eating this or that. This is not what you're doing here. You're really doing original research and going back to original sources.
I do. I go back to the newspaper archives. I use Ancestry. I use primary sources when I can. And it's amazing what you find out about a restaurant that's different than what's sort of been in the newspaper articles over the years. A lot of the journalists, you know, didn't have the resources that I have. So they would use the article that came before them 5 years or 10 years ago. So they would sort of carry forward misconceptions, shall we say.
So you're correcting some misinformation while you're at it.
I am, quite a bit.
Give us an example.
Oh, so they're probably the best example. There's a restaurant called Tutenberg. Actually, it was a series of coffee shops throughout downtown. Anybody that ate downtown probably ate at a Tutenberg's for breakfast or for lunch at one point or another. And their tagline was, since 1812, there were five generations of Tutenbergs, and they said that their patriarch, Franz Tutenberg, started the first Tutenberg's in 1812 downtown at 2nd and Walnut. And, I mean, it blossomed. The St. Louis Chamber of Commerce in 1962 gave them an award for their 150th year. They said that Lewis and Clark ate at the restaurant in 1812. Meriwether Lewis died in 1809, but that's not a big deal.
Just a small detail.
Yeah. So it turns out that when you do the research, Franz Tutenberg was born in Russia in Prussia in 1813. A year.
Wow. So
after,
he could not have opened this restaurant in 1812 St. Louis.
And he didn't immigrate to this country until the mid-1830s. So the restaurant probably opened up sometime in the mid-1830s or 1840, and it was at 3rd and Olive, not at 2nd and Walnut, but that's not what you find in the literature.
So I love that you're setting this record straight, and even it sounds like the business itself had some false information. I'm sure it came from honest intentions. These stories get twisted.
Absolutely. I mean, it just was word of mouth, you know, throughout the years, and that's what their father told them, and that's what his father told them, and so they just carried it forward.
But the thing that I sometimes find in St. Louis, and I suppose this is true anywhere, is that sometimes people can't handle the truth. They get really upset. They want to believe what they've always been told. Was there a backlash?
Not exactly, but when I tried to talk to a current in Tutenberg, she didn't want to talk about it. And there have been some others. There was the mother-in-law house in St. Charles. The story was that this guy built it for his wife's mother and built sort of a two-part house so she could live in one and he could live in another. Well, that didn't happen either. But, you know, people want to think that happens because that adds to the mystique.
Yeah, people want to print the legend.
Right.
And meanwhile, you're finding out the truth. Right. I love it. Well, boy, what an interesting journey you've been on. And these are two great blogs. There's both Lost Tables and Lost Dishes. And if you're listening to this conversation, we want to know, what's the lost St. Louis restaurant or dish that you miss the most? You can call us at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at STL on air. We heard from so many people who have various places they've missed, dishes they've missed. In some cases, they miss old iterations of things. The restaurant continues, but they miss the location that used to be. In other cases, it's a very specific dish, and you really went deep down that road as well.
Yeah, in terms of the lost dishes, that sort of evolved. You know, people started talking about the various dishes that they miss, and I had access to them because a lot of them were published in the St. Louis Post and St. Louis Globe archives. So I initially started pulling those out, and then there are a lot of other places that you can find them. So I decided I'd put them all in one place. So I put those on Lost Dishes. It was easy enough to get the recipes, but, you know, a recipe website isn't fun without photos. And I didn't have photos of most of them. I talked my wife into making some of them.
You actually got her to make the dish so you could photograph it.
Yeah, not too many.
I was going to say, that's a good partner right there.
So most of them, I would just find photos online. You know, Google Photos, Google Images is nice. And I would find photos that, I think it looks like this. Occasionally, there'd be parsley. There's no parsley. So I'd use Photoshop to Photoshop out the parsley. So, you know, I am meticulous with lost tables. I will not put anything in there that I know isn't absolutely 100% factual. Lost dishes, the recipes are accurate, the photos are not.
Interesting. And you are kind of just finding these photos wherever you can. That hasn't gotten you in any hot water?
Not yet.
Well, good. I hope we're not going to jinx that today. So here are some of the things that people have talked about here. Jennifer writes on Facebook how much she misses Chez Lyon, poulet au truffles, Hall's Ferry Inn, fried shrooms. Gregory writes on Twitter, my answer will always be Casa Gallardo. Now, this is a story that you got into in Lost Tables. What an amazing story.
Yeah, Casa Gallardo is a fantastic story. And actually, that was one where the Gallardos are still around. And they helped me with that. So they gave me a lot of the information.
So you're actually out there doing some reporting.
Yeah, I do. When they're around, you know, a lot of them aren't around anymore. But they were, and they were very gracious in helping me tell their story. So it was a lot of fun.
So I have to ask, I mean, you're a radiologist. Like, this is very much a side project. When you contact people, are they wondering, are you a journalist? Are you a food blogger? People must be very surprised to learn you're a physician.
Sometimes, yeah. But I usually downplay that. I don't usually tell them I am.
You don't lead with, I'm a doctor and I'm here to ask you some questions.
Not really, no.
You just pose as a humble food blogger.
A humble food blogger.
And that people answer the phone.
They do. And they're interested in telling the story.
Yeah. I imagine that for some of the families involved in these restaurants, they have as much nostalgia for these places as you do.
Actually, a lot of the families don't know as much as I end up knowing. And I've gotten, not only do I put the history, but I'm able to find old photographs. I've got a huge menu collection, and I put the full menus online. So I'll get emails from grandchildren that thank you. I didn't know this about the restaurant, and these are photographs I've never seen before, and that's one of the most rewarding parts of doing this.
That's great to get that reaction from the families. Right. Do you find that this is also something where, you know, when people are reading this work, that they have a response of, this is a place I used to go?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really think it's obviously some of it's the food we miss, but it's more about, I think, family. It's about, you went there with your parents, you went there with your girlfriend, you went there with your wife. You know, it's those memories that these restaurants evoke more so, or at least as much as the food.
We're talking today to Dr. Harley Hammerman. He has two blogs, Lost Tables and Lost Dishes. They both pay tribute to shuttered restaurants of St. Louis. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation and hear about some of your favorites that have been lost to time. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Our guest today is Dr. Harley Hammerman, and we're discussing his two blogs, Lost Dishes and Lost Tables. Both explore St. Louis restaurants that are gone but not forgotten. Lost Dishes digs into the recipes that formed those restaurants' most indelible memories. These two blogs just have a great readership, and it's easy to see why. It's such well-researched pieces and also well-told. So we've invited you into the conversation to share your memories. We have heard from so many of you. I'm going to go to the phone lines. Mark is calling from St. Louis. Hi, Mark. You're on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, thanks for having me. I remember this one restaurant out in Chesterfield called Sam Wilson's. It was a very family-friendly restaurant in a place, I think it's still there, called the Barn at Lucerne. And I remember it being this kind of this towering indoor structure with all these cool things on the walls and a really family-friendly place. We used to kind of run around the barn afterwards. I just have very fond memories of that place. I don't know if anybody else remembers it.
And Mark, were you going there then as a kid? That's why you were doing that running around?
Yep. Yeah, I was probably maybe 5 to 10. And we'd go there. I remember going there on the weekends. And it was always very crowded.
And I believe that the dairy, it's this beautiful old dairy. It's still there. It's in, it's on near Clarkson Road out in Chesterfield. A beautiful place. That has like very fond memories for me.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for sharing that memory. Dr. Hammerman, this is one on your radar.
It is. So Mark's description was spot on. That's exactly what it was like there. And actually, it was there was an organization called Gilbert Robinson out of Kansas City, and that was one of their restaurants. It was actually a chain. They did the Leather Bottle in Clayton, and they also did another restaurant called Annie Santa Fe. And they were all, you know, chains. But they didn't seem like chains, and they were all really wonderful restaurants.
Well, that's too bad that one is gone. It was great to hear Mark's memories of that. Let's go back to the phone lines. Drew is calling from Baldwin. Hi, Drew. You're on St. Louis on the Air.
Well, hi, Dr. Hammerman. I knew and worked with your father, and he and I would often enjoy a lunch at the old Cardwell's in Clayton right there at the corner of Forsyth.
Boy, and that was a great restaurant. Yeah. Dr. Hammerman, do you know who Drew is? Or
I'm not sure. I might know who Drew is. A lot of people knew my father.
Did you enjoy, or your father enjoyed these restaurants at Cardwell's?
My father enjoyed Cardwell's. He enjoyed the one in Clayton. He enjoyed the one out on Lindbergh. He had his table in the corner that he would go and sit there. And Cardwell's is, I can't tell you how many times where my wife and I would say, let's go to Cardwell's, you know, when we just wanted to grab a quick bite on a weeknight, and we can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But Bill Cardwell was fantastic. In fact, when the restaurant closed, he had a big sign that was in the mall entrance, and he gave that to me. So I've got that at home as part of my memorabilia collection.
Wow. And did he give this to you because he was a fan of the blog?
Yes, yes.
That's great. And so do you have the sense that current chefs and people who aren't even thinking about closing places, they're reading your work?
Yeah, but I don't think they want to think about that because they don't want to think about being a lost table.
You're kind of the Grim Reaper, like lurking.
Exactly.
Well, Drew, thank you for sharing that reminiscence. We also got an email from Tom in University City. He says, I miss Cicero's in the Loop. It was a friendly neighborhood Italian restaurant that had good food at moderate prices. I ate there despite a 1% sales tax for the blankety blank loop trolley. There has been nothing to replace it. I know a lot of food lovers feel that way about the loop trolley driving away some of their favorite places. But Cicero, this was such a touchstone for so many loop people.
It was actually two locations. There was one that was initially further east, and it started out as a more of a music venue than it did a restaurant. And they would bring in all kinds of great bands. And then they moved and expanded their space a little bit further west. And we'd go all the time for pizzas, and it was great.
So I have not recently read your piece about Cicero, so I'm sort of going off memory on this. But I remember this was one where there had sort of been a family in charge, and then someone ended up passing away. And do I have like the bones of the story right?
Yeah, I mean, basically the fellow that started it, his kids didn't want to take it over after he passed away, so. Sort of that was a story.
Is that a story that frequently ends up being the case?
You know, it works both ways. There's sometimes where there are families that you know, the children are in it, and they take it over, and their children are in it, and they take it over. And then there are others where their children want no part of it.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to think of, I don't know. I mean, it's hard. You shouldn't take over something you're not feeling, but it's hard to see these places close for that. So I want to go back, since we're talking about Del Mar anyway, where the Cicero's is that I was familiar with at the point that one closed. Going back to Golden Fried Chicken Loaf, this is the restaurant that got you into this. And I feel like most people don't even know what a Golden Fried Chicken Loaf is. So what were they serving at this place?
So the reason it was called Golden Fried Chicken Loaf was that there were two big long French bread, which they cut in half, and they put a whole fried chicken in the middle of the French bread. Just that's how it was presented. I truly didn't pay any attention to the French bread when I was going there. I just was interested in the fried chicken. It was the most wonderful fried chicken, or at least I remember it being the most wonderful fried chicken.
What made it so good?
It was the spice, the spice and the crust. It was started by a woman. Her name was Mina Wolf. And then she became Mina Bratton, and then she became Mina Evans. Her mother was named Mina, her daughter was named Mina, and her granddaughter was named Mina. And her granddaughter is actually, her name is Mina Nashen. Mina Nashen's husband is Kevin Nashen, and they have the Sydney Street Cafe.
Oh, wow.
And I've talked to Mina, I said, because they've got the recipes. I'm able to get the recipes from some of these restaurateurs, old restaurateurs. I can't get the golden fried chicken loaf recipe from Mina's mother.
And why is that? I mean, your love for this place is so sincere.
I'm not sure, but I'm going to still work on it. But I told Mina, hey, you know, let's open up Golden Fried Chicken Loaf again, and we can do it. But she hasn't bid yet.
That's interesting. So they don't want to give up the recipe. Do you think it's because they have thought about maybe trying to reopen this themselves?
Perhaps. And if that's the case, go for it, because I'll be there.
So when we talk about these lost dishes and trying to get the recipes for them, I understand your wife commissioned a themed dinner. This was for your 70th birthday, that this was an entire lost dishes theme menu.
Yeah, she surprised me for my 70th birthday. There was a wonderful chef, his name is Scott Phillips, who I'd worked with. The Working Woman's Survival Show out in St. Charles, he got the idea to make some lost dishes as a demo there, and he had me come and I talked about them. So she contacted him, and he prepared them all, some in advance, some in the on site, and it was a dinner with my kids and grandkids and my mother, and it was the most fantastic dinner. He was spot on in his presentations.
And so what were the highlights of this meal?
So he started with these Maryland crab cakes from a place called Crazy Fish. Mm-hmm. Then we had these spinach feta strudels from a place called Duff's. We had those were our past appetizers. Then our sit down, we had grilled portobello mushroom and asparagus from Portobello. We had smoked trout pancake from Balaban's. We had the pepperline steak from the Tenderloin Room. We had this papillote of salmon from Café de France. And then the pièce de résistance was the dessert. We had the Cleopatra from Cyrano's.
And the Cleopatra. I'm not familiar with this dish.
The Cleopatra was the most wonderful dessert ever. So Cyrano's was on Clayton Road in Des Moines. And it was a coffee house. They had coffees, and they had some sandwiches, and they had lots of desserts. The Cleopatra was sort of their crowning dessert. It was French vanilla ice cream, Chapman's ice cream at the time. It had whole strawberries. It had cut up bananas. It had a rum sauce. It had gold brick chocolate on it, and was all smothered in mountains of Peavely Dairy whipped cream. And my wife and I would go there when we were dating on a Friday night or a Saturday night, and we'd order these roast beef sandwiches. We'd get the Cleopatra initially with all the whipped cream, and she would make me take the whipped cream off. And then eventually we ordered it without the whipped cream. We would never do that today. Today the whipped cream would be on it.
The whipped cream was on. So this was a very personal dessert for you.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, that is, wow, what a wonderful birthday party. And so your wife put all this together.
She put it all together. It was phenomenal.
That is amazing. I love that story. I'm going to squeeze in one last call here. Lori is calling from St. Louis. Lori, hi, you're on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, my name is Mary.
Oh, Mary, thank you so much for joining us.
That's okay. Good afternoon. I was thinking of two restaurants. One my family owned. It was Three Sisters Cafe. It was originally on 9th and Howard, and then the highway took that.
Ugh, painful.
Highway 70. And then they moved to 935 North Broadway at Tyler. And it was a breakfast, lunch, and dinner place with a bar, and it serviced all the workers and from all the factories there. And it was just a family kind of place. So customers would have their wives and their kids meet them in the evening. And then we went to they cooked fried chicken and steaks. And it was just fun. A lot of good memories.
How wonderful to have that in your family. And you said you had one more.
And we have one more. A good friend of ours owned Tradewinds Restaurant in Shoto. It was across from the Peabody Housing Complex.
Okay.
And they served the best barbecued ribs, you know, charcoal and fried chicken, and they catered to the late crowd. They didn't open till 5 or 6 in the evening, but they stayed open till 3 in the morning.
Oh, wow. That's a great memory. And thank you for sharing about those two places. You know, speaking of staying open till 3 in the morning, that reminds me of a tweet we got from Dave, who notes, down on South Grand, we're still mourning Mangia. I'm glad that the space is being filled with two great restaurants now, Dave writes. But that was where our kids graduated from kids menu to adult menu, forever our family's place. That's that rare restaurant that straddled the super late night hours with being a great family place. But that idea of our family's place, so many of us feel that way about a restaurant we had nothing to do with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's that's what I said. It's It's about the food, but it's more about who you went to the restaurant with, be it your, you know, girlfriend when you were dating, or your kids, or your parents, and it's those memories, I think, that are special to people, and that's why Lost Tables is taken off like it has.
So with Mangia, that makes me think of all the restaurants we've lost in just the last couple years in this time of upheaval. Do you feel like now there's almost more than you can get to?
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, there was just Calico's last night just yes. announced that it was closing.
And that's a downtown institution.
Yeah, that's been in. It was downtown. It was out in the suburbs. We used to go all the time with our kids. They had a great salad that we ate all the time. So, yeah, unfortunately, there are more and more that are coming. I'm working on Cucinelli's right now, and they just closed last year.
So there's, you're going to be busy.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I do think, you know, you do such a lovely job with these tributes. I feel like for any family that's ever owned a restaurant, it's such a great compliment to have you be the person digging in and telling their story. And I'm just so grateful that you were willing to join it today. I want to let people know, if you're interested, losttables.com and lostdishes.com, and you can check out all of Dr. Harley Hammerman's work. You can also find that group on Facebook, and you can add to that conversation, which has taken on a life of its own. So, Dr. Harley Hammerman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sarah. It's a pleasure to be here.
This episode was produced by Laura Hamden, with audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr. Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here. If you learned something new from today's episode, consider leaving us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the easiest way to help people discover our show. We appreciate it. Thank you. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.